Hey folks, Scott Horton here for Veterans for Peace at veteransforpeace.org. I'm not a vet, but if you are, I'd like to ask you to consider joining Veterans for Peace. As you know, in matters of foreign wars, a veteran's voice is given much more weight. Well, Veterans for Peace is making veterans' voices heard in ways and places where they can really make a difference. There are more than 175 chapters of Veterans for Peace in all 50 states, working hard to eliminate nuclear weapons, seek justice for veterans and victims of war, and abolish war as an instrument of American national policy. It's the peace vets versus the chicken hawks. Join up the good fight at veteransforpeace.org. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous D.C. think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit, Dagny & Lane, at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. First, we go right now to Rye Dawson of Anti-Neocons. Rye's 2 cents, an American expat living in Japan and destroying Richard Pearl's reputation with his every breath and stroke of the keypad there. What's it called? Keyboard there. I wanted to give you a platform to talk about what's going on back at your home. You live in Japan now, right? But this is your home island, is Hatteras Island off the coast of North Carolina. Is that right?
That's right.
And you're, what, born and raised there? Or?
I've lived in, like, 9 different places, but I'm a native to that island.
Yeah. All right.
And it's very important to me.
And now, I know that you've written about insane, and I know that actually you've petitioned and participated in the politics of insane governmental policies surrounding, you know, how that island is dealt with by the state, and I don't know the feds, but certainly with the state government for years now. And then, so now you got an even bigger chip on your shoulder after the recent hurricane. Superstorm Sandy, as they call it. So, first of all, give us the background as to, you know, how it is they've been screwing you this whole time, and then how much worse it's gotten.
All right, well, I'll start with the geography. There's Cape Hatteras Island, and below that is Ocracoke Island, and it's called the Outer Banks. It's about 30 miles east of North Carolina, although it is part of North Carolina, of course. It's a very thin boomerang-shaped island, so the sound and the ocean are quite close together and it's very narrow. And what's been happening over the last 40 years of neglect from the state is the ocean has been encroaching closer and closer to the road. And I mean the road. There's a road that goes north and south on the island. And if any part, any section of that road is taken out, everybody south of that cannot reach the mainland. And that's the situation right now. Even though Hurricane Sandy hit back in October before Halloween, people right now, today, cannot get on and off the island. They set up a ferry service, and that'll close down anytime the wind blows. But to get to this, say, well, why is this happening? Is this just Mother Nature? And I have to say, no, it's actually the state. And it's been a number of different factions that have been involved. It's not one government agency. It's a multitude of them that have screwed everything up. I guess we could start with the genius Army Corps of Engineers that did such a great job in Louisiana, and I'm being sarcastic. They went to Cape Hatteras Island down in the town of Buxton, which is right in the middle of the island. They took dump trucks full of sand over and over again, right off the beach, ruined the dunes, took all the sand away, and filled in a swamp to build a Navy base. That naval base, by the way, is no longer even being used. It's been defunct for years now. They put all these giant houses on it during the housing bubble, which are also now empty. And the base used to be where the lighthouse was. They moved the lighthouse after paying a company from New York $20 million to pick it up and move it, but they didn't think about everybody's homes who lived near the lighthouse or any of the people who live there. They just destroyed the beach, and then rather than building it up like every other state, they just picked the lighthouse up and moved it and abandoned the naval base. And they never replenished the sand they took. And right where they took the sand from Hurricane Dennis, Earl, Irene, and a number of others, the water has come right over because it takes the path of least resistance and flooded the town over and over again. That was from the Army Corps of Engineers and I guess the Navy for the Coast Guard base, two government agencies. On top of that, we had the DOT, the Department of Transportation. What those geniuses did is they came down, they have to repair the road. They raised the road up a level so that everything between the beach and the road is caught in the sort of punch bowl so that when it rains or if an ocean wave comes through, it has to get all the way up to the level of the road before it can get over the road. And everything in between, of course, gets flooded. Now, things are on stilts and whatnot, but it still, it destroys people's property over and over again. But then on the local government, we have, it used to be Mark Bassnight for a long time was the senator's name. They profiteer from storms because their family owns construction companies and they always hire Bassnight Inc. to do the repairs. And rather than taking preventative measures, they purposely neglect the beaches and the road and allow storms to do the maximum damage and then go and hire themselves at overly appraised prices to go fix the highways or fix the pipelines and the power lines and everything else goes to themselves. So that's the reason for their neglect. And then we have one more government agency, the National Park Service, the worst one, which has about as much to do with servicing parks as the Patriot Act does to patriotism. The National Park Service has done a number on the island. One, in the town of Rodanthe, which is on the northern part, they burn down the forest. They burn down all the vegetation, which is what holds the dunes together. The dunes, the giant sand dunes that protect the beach. For the sake of some birds, they say. But every single time they do it, that is exactly where the water comes through and washes the highway out. And the highway's been replaced four or five times from other storms. Last year during Irene, everybody warned them, if we don't have beach nourishment, and there's a number of ways to do it, if we don't get that, this is going to just happen again next year and people could die. Well, what happened was this year, storm came, still had no beach nourishment, washed the highway out and flooded a bunch of people's property. And they're still trapped there. And I give you a personal story real quick. A girl I grew up with, she's a woman now, her name is Kristen, was having her baby and could not get off the island and was stuck at the ferry. There's no hospital on the island. She had to go to Nag's Head, so they had to drive. They took four-wheel drive, and they went up there. And the ferry captain refused to let them on, saying, you're not going to have a baby on my ferry. And they had to wait for the next boat before they could get off. And she finally barely made it to the hospital and had a little boy. Her mother missed the birth, though, because she couldn't get on and off. Anything like that, any kind of medical emergency or anything, just people going to work, they can't do it. And this is today, and there's no news about this. They'll talk about the grass getting wet in New York or whatever, and that's not New York's fault. That's the press's fault. But here we have Americans, thousands of Americans living in North Carolina who are stranded, and they can't even fix the highway even after half a month.
So to rewind to the beginning here, this is not, hey, you live on an island out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and sometimes storms come and ruin your island, and so that's life. What do you expect everybody else to, take care of that for you? What you're saying is, no, actually, the reason that there's a crisis is because of the government coming in and screwing around in so many ways that now the people of that island are left helpless, and now they need a bridge, whereas before they didn't even really need a bridge.
Right. Well, they've built a new bridge in P Island, which is not an island. It's like Rhode Island. It just has island in the name. It's just the northern part of our island. It's 12 miles. It's just national park. No one lives there. There aren't any houses there or anything. So nobody's getting their personal property protected. Nobody built there. Nobody was stupid enough to build a house on the beach or something. It doesn't matter, though. Even though if it's parked, the road still has to pass through it. And that's where the water is cut through and washed away the road. And the environmentalists don't do anything about it because they don't care. They don't really care about the birds or anything. We have a lot of different things going on. This is a very unique place. It does not have corporate franchises. We don't have McDonald's or Walmart or any of that there. But they'd love to come down there. And what's happening is we've got over 30% unemployment for other things the government has done, shutting down beaches, letting the road wash away, and so on. And these giant corporations would love to come down when people are basically forced to sell their land, and then we end up with food lions and all the corporate trappings. And this is not a case of somebody losing their house or their business because they were dumb and they built it right in the water. It has nothing to do with it. People, a lot of these people built their homes and things 30 or 40 years ago, and the island's been there for centuries without washing away. What happened was the government went there and literally took truckloads of sand and took them out of the spot where it's naturally supposed to be and went in and filled in a swamp to build a useless base that's now been abandoned. That's just everyone's tax dollars in North Carolina ended up doing that.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you saying that you believe that this is sort of a Naomi Klein disaster capitalism kind of thing where they don't mind screwing you because eventually if things get bad enough, then they'll be able to go ahead and stick all their chain stores in there?
Yeah, I do believe that because north of our island is the areas called Nag's Head and Kill Devil Hills, and they've already done it to that area. Same sort of thing. If you go up there, they've got the shopping malls and all the fast food stores, etc. And the same sort of thing happened. They are burning their vegetation and allowing beach erosion on purpose. But once the chain stores got down there, then the laws changed. So they'll protect that stuff, but they won't protect the mom-and-pop businesses.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, well, because you got to be able to draw that much water to be able to command those that many resources. And this is what I was thinking when you were talking about the Army Corps of Engineers is, unless I guess you're in real good with your congressman or something, who in the world can hold them accountable? I mean, who even knows how to get a hold of them to complain, you know?
Right.
It might as well be the United Nations coming in there and, you know, doing this or that. There's no way to stop them.
The amazing thing is we have another issue with the Park Service closing down the park, which, you know, closing a beach on an island is a recipe for economic disaster. And even though Congressman Jones, our Walter Jones, who just put impeachment bills in for Obama, he's on our side. So was the governor, Perdue. She's a lame duck right now. So are both our senators, Kay Hagan and Richard Burr. The federal government, the state government, and our county commissioners, every single one of them, are on our side. So you think, well, if the entire government wants to reopen the beaches, then what's the problem? The problem is Terrence Boyle, this neoconservative judge, the same guy that countersued the families from Blackwater when Blackwater was hanging from bridges in Fallujah. He countersued him with Fred Felding, Bush's lawyer, and you know, the same jerk. Issued this dissent decree with these pseudo-environmental groups to close their beach. So a federal judge has all the power. So even when all the government branches back you on something, you still can't get anything done, even when you do reach your congressman and all your elected representatives. And it's totally unconstitutional because the judge is acting like a legislative branch issuing decrees when that's not supposed to be part of the judiciary, but that's the problem. It's really hard to take on these groups that have millions and millions of dollars.
Well, now, is part of this, too, that, well, I don't know, is it just that corruption, or is it that the state of North Carolina just can't afford the bridge that you want them to build? I mean, even taking into account, say, you know, the past six steps that the government took to get you into this mess were really bad ones, and I think you're writing on the Facebook page there that, you know, this highway's got to be replaced with a bridge or else whatever you're going to do. Can they afford one? Do you need the feds to build it for you, or how's that going to work?
No, that's not the issue. It's not about the bridge or the money.
It's not about it. Okay.
We've got a bridge already that is falling apart, and the little bridge they made on the road, we're talking about 15 feet long. It was nothing. It's not about the money or that. They have to replace the road. Because it's washed away. Our problem it would cost far less to prevent disaster than it is to react to it. Our thing is not just the road. If we don't get beach nourishment, everything is going to be gone. Like, no one's going to be able to live there. There won't be electricity. There won't be power lines. There will be nothing.
Well, and so,
and it's a third of North Carolina's tourism, so they would be losing far more money than to replace an entire bridge, even if they had to.
And then, so by beach nourishment, you mean they gotta take sand from the base and put it back, or from somewhere else and put it back where they took it from?
Well, they don't have to dig up the base. We could have breakwaters, we could have jetties, or we could dredge and pump sand from the sound over to where the ocean is. Or they could bring it from another area. There's a lot of different methods, and people can debate on to, you know, which one are most effective would depend. I mean, you'd have to have studies about it. But, I mean, that's what they do in every other state. The difference is all the other states have major port cities, and North Carolina does not. We don't have a Norfolk or a Miami or a New York City or anything on the water. And so because there isn't a massive population base in North Carolina, I think that's why it gets neglected.
Yeah. Well, shoot, I don't know what to do, man. Is there a way, does it just come down to, like, trying to get a million likes on your Facebook page there and send the thing around and try to get some publicity, get on TV or something? Because, I mean, like you're saying, there are people who are pretty much stranded out there. The wind blows, the ferry can't sail.
Yeah.
You know, what is this? You know, Lebanon or something? This is America. We can't afford to have travel to and fro, a little island off the coast of North Carolina. We have to wait this to be solved?
They can spend billions of dollars building bridges and things in Iraq and Afghanistan and send billions of dollars to Israel and to many other despots around the world, as we both know, but they can't take care of Americans.
Yeah, we're the last priority. And, you know, it's funny because even during the bubble times, I used to warn the people that, you know, they'll consume every last bit of life and property in this country before they give up the empire. And that's really what we're seeing right now, I think. You know, you see, not like this by itself is bad, but as an indicator, it's bad when you see summers getting longer and schools having to cut back more and more and roads not getting paved and street lights not getting turned on until later and later, if at all, or turned off earlier and earlier, these kinds of things. Like, they really are, it's cannibalism. They really are consuming the seed corn here and devouring America from the inside out in order they can pay so that Netanyahu can kill some people.
Yeah, it's disgusting, but I mean, the military-industrial complex is the largest umbrella corporation in the world, so they have a large voice. And this area by area, it's not just North Carolina. There are other areas, small places in Florida and New Jersey even, who are in the same sort of situation, not as extreme as Hatteras is because we just got hit by Sandy, but were they to be hit by another storm like that, they could be in the same situation. They've had very similar things with different government organizations, and the problem is we can't get any press about it, which is why I'm really happy that at least you are willing to get our story out there.
Yeah, well, I apologize in advance for how little effect it's going to have on this situation, you know. I wish it mattered, but,
it matters.
Try at least.
It matters.
All right, well, listen, here, let me give you 10 minutes to talk about Gaza. Why in the world is Israel shooting all these Gazan fish in their barrel?
Well, aside from Netanyahu being a psychopath, I think the timing was they were going to do it after the election, whether Romney got in or not. Gaza's been a little uppity. You know, they've had a lot of failures recently, with Hezbollah had a drone over Dimona, where Israel has its secular nuclear weapons. And Hamas was going to the UN, and Israel has fallen on its face so many times. And so I think what happened is Bibi has his own elections coming in January. And this is a good timing for them between around Thanksgiving to Christmas, and with the Petraeus scandal and all the other media, he thought he could get away with it. And, you know, they started this by shooting a 13-year-old boy from a helicopter. And then they went to that boy's funeral and another kid they killed and shot up the funeral. That was missing from the American media completely. But this is nothing new as to why they're doing it. They're always doing it. I mean, they've been blockading them, blockading food, and this has been the plan for a long time. Ever since, you could go back to when they invaded Lebanon in 2006, they set that up first by getting rid of Hariri. He was assassinated. That was blamed on Syria. Assad was forced to move his troops out of Lebanon. Once they were gone, Israel invaded. And the Lebanese military didn't lift a finger. But even with just Hezbollah, they were still repelled because the Israelis aren't very good at fighting people that have a little bit more than rocks and homemade rockets to fire back at them with. But now we have a different situation with Syria even more bogged down. Assad can't help whatsoever. Hezbollah is trapped as well. And so there was an opportunity to really invade Gaza and hammer them completely this time.
You know what, though? I mean, to what end? I see the only talk in the Israeli papers that I see about regime change are people saying, nah, we can't do that. I mean, hell, it wouldn't work anyway. So... you know, even if they invade, it still only means kill some people for a while and then still just withdraw back to the status quo, right? What am I missing?
Well, that's the point. They don't have a goal of just getting the land or getting regime change or anything like that. Their goal is that using all their toys just for the sake of it to make lots of money. The same reason we use drones. We don't need to kill those people with drones. You kill a dozen people, that's just for profit. It has no effect on the larger war.
So you think the bottom line really is just weapons contracts for Netanyahu and his buddies? I mean, they're not dropping that many bombs, right?
No, but it's a way of passing the pork around, and it's a way of reinvigorating the fear of Israel and the power with them. And more so, it scares the bejesus out of the Israelis to where they continually will perpetuate the security state and vote the Likudniks in again, because they are perpetually afraid of all their neighbors because of their own foreign policy. So they're sort of like, well, we hate this guy, but we got to keep them in there in order to feel safe.
Right, yeah. That's what I was going to say. It seems like that's the overwhelming thing, is terrorizing the people of the Gaza Strip and Israel too, and especially with the elections coming up. But, you know, we read this thing. I don't know if you saw it in
Well, one of the weapons systems
I wanted to mention
was the Smithsonian
magazine about how Thomas Jefferson, when he would torture his slave children in his nail factory, it was, you know, he would torture some so that the others would remain in terrordom and, you know, bow down to his will, that kind of thing. And so then in this case, Netanyahu is Thomas Jefferson.
Well, that's a bad comparison, but with Thomas, but one of the systems they wanted to get the bugs out of our test is the Iron Dome defense system, which is supposed to block these rockets and missiles. And they love to beta test things on Gaza before they go into Lebanon or try to chomp a bigger fish. They did that before in Casled. So the Iron Dome, of course, we find out doesn't really work. And that's maybe because it was built by the Americans, and like the F-22 and F-35s and a slew of other expensive toys, they don't work because they build these things just to involve as many bells and whistles as possible, to involve as many industries as possible, and they're not really caring about the function.
Right. Although you'd think Netanyahu would care about the function, right? Because ultimately he wants to be able to attack Iran and be able to shoot down any incoming missiles from there.
Right. They care. So, but they might as well test it on Gaza rather than Iran. But I don't think he'd really ever...
Well, now, when you say it doesn't work, how well does it work? Because, you know, CNN shows a few rockets being shot down.
Yeah, it is getting portions of them, but some are getting through. And it only would take, well, these rockets are a joke. I mean, a real missile, if that got through, that would do a lot more damage than these Katyushas and things that they built, even the M5s. I mean, they're rudimentary compared to what Iran has.
You know, I wonder whether anyone in the Israeli government really believes that if only they kill enough Gazans that at some point they'll just acquiesce, I don't know, and just, you know, self-deport to Egypt or wherever they're supposed to go. I don't know, go drown themselves in the Mediterranean Sea or something like that. I mean,
well,
surely Israel could carpet bomb the Gaza Strip, as Ariel Sharon's son is proposing in the Jerusalem Post. Just kill them all, and then they'll all be dead, and we won't have to put up with their crap anymore, is basically what his article says. And they can't, I guess, go quite that far. But so,
The international community would prevent it from going that far. But Netanyahu has written about bombing them back in the Stone Age. The thing is, when you bomb them enough, you can get the wealthy people to leave. and they don't mind having a lot of the poor people stay because Israel uses them as virtual slave labor later for the people getting paid $40 a week.
So you think ultimately it is about putting the settlers back into Gaza? Just this time, their power compared to the Gazans will be even more.
I don't know if they'll put the settlers there. I think they like having the settlers in the West Bank. But what they use the Gazan labor force, because these people do go into Israel to work for pennies, basically. And they have to, because the economy is shot. They have no industry, they have no capital, and they're forced to go work in Israel.
And now, so what did you make of this thing, Gershon Baskin, this peace activist who is, working with the Egyptians and working with Hamas on trying to create a peace deal? Do you think that is why, for people who aren't familiar, it's in Haaretz, you can read all about it. It was the guy that was the target of the first big assassination, not the 13-year-old kid playing soccer, but the real escalation was when they killed this Hamas military commander, Jabari, I believe is how you say it. And, do you think that the reason that they killed him was because he had just received this peace offer? That's what Jess Raimondo said in his piece today.
Yeah, I mean, from my research, that's what it seems like. Jamar wanted to negotiate a truce, so they killed him en route in his car. Because Israel's not interested in peace. You can't talk about peace while you simultaneously occupy your neighbors and have an embargo on your other neighbors. I mean, it's obviously they're not interested in peace. And
well,
Hamas is a creation of Israel to begin with. I mean, this is sort of the players they set up so they can point to them and say, oh, suicide bombings, which hasn't happened since 2005. And so the new excuse is, oh, someone shot a rocket. And it's pretty easy even to shoot a rocket yourself. I mean, they don't even know where these things are coming from half the time. So, I mean, Hamas is something for them to say, well, they have in their charter to push Israel into the sea and stuff. But that's a joke. I mean, I've seen these guys in interviews saying, like, we'd gladly recognize them or whatever. And that's just an abstract thing anyway. It just doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. Israel is not interested in peace whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, well, it sure seems that way. All right, so one of the things that you hit on there was just, you know, the occupation and the fact that, well, you know, like TV says it's a war, but it can't really be a war if the one side is completely occupied and dominated by the other. It's sort of like, you know, if you kidnap somebody, you have them locked in your basement, and then they try to fight their way out of your basement, and you go, oh, you're attacking me, wah, or whatever. It couldn't possibly be that the person doing the kidnapping is the one being aggressed against. But so my question for you is, how in the hell do you get people to understand that, right? Because on TV, they go, oh, yeah, you know, Hamas and Israel, these two equal fighters are duking it out like Romney and Obama. And people believe that shit, man. They think that Hamas controls a state somewhere and it's at war with Israel.
Yeah, and isn't that funny how uniform the press is about all that when that's really easy to debunk? But the American press is bribed by AIPAC and a lot of Israeli lobbies, Zionist Israeli lobbies, and they're very uniform on that. Plus, whatever is good for business, and I mean the killing business, is always what the U.S. Stands behind. Our mass media has always been pro-war. It doesn't matter where the war is. So Israel's our key ally because they go to war with everybody every 5 years or so.
Yeah, you know, I kind of think when I read all these stories about, you know, Israel kills six kids and then goes on a tantrum crying, boo-hoo, I'm the poor victim here. It makes me so mad. And then I realize the reason why it pisses me off so much is because they're just like little bitty America, right? Running around murdering people and all the while and just bullying the hell out of everyone and not even trying to disguise it for the foreign consumption. But then at home in all the domestic consumption media, oh, woe is me, poor me. The forces of evil have attacked me for my goodness. Oh, boo hoo. We ain't never heard of anybody doing anything violent before. Why would they ever attack us?
And, well, it sounds just like the old Bush and Cheney rhetoric of we got attacked for our freedoms.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's the same thing as killing all the Indians, or almost all of them. You know, your ancestors survived through it somehow, but pretty much all the Indians got killed. And, of course, the entire narrative for the 19th century was these merciless Indian savages were straight out of the Declaration of Independence. They just won't leave us alone.
Yeah, that was the first wave of Hollywood films was all the bad Indians, and then it got replaced by Arabs.
Yeah, well, the Reds and then the Arabs, yeah. All right. Yeah. Hey, listen, man. I'm sorry. We got to go. I wish that I had something constructive to add to your dilemma there with your home island there in North Carolina. I sure wish the best to you and all your people back there. And I sure hope that, you know, somewhere this has got to be an appealing enough story for somebody at some news magazine show. I don't know. Maybe you could get it sold.
I hope so. I hope someone hears. It only takes one, you know, so I hope so. And I appreciate the time, and I'll come back and talk Gaza sometime when it's not 2 a.m.
Sure. All right, man. Well, get some sleep. Thanks very much, Rye. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, everybody. That is Rye Dawson from Anti-Neocons, Rye's 2 cents. He's Richard Pearl's greatest enemy. And, well, other than himself, you know.
Ben Franklin said those who are willing to sacrifice essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither. Hi, Scott Horton here for the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's a playing card-sized steel Bill of Rights designed to set off the metal detectors anywhere the police state goes, so you can remind those around you the freedoms we've lost. And for a limited time, get free shipping when you purchase a frequent flyer pack of 5 Bill of Rights Security Edition cards. Play a leading role in the security theater with a Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. The Scott Horton Show is brought to you by the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Join the great Jacob Hornberger and some of the best writers in the libertarian movement like James Bovard, Sheldon Richmond, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more for a real individualist take on the most important matters of peace, liberty, and prosperity in our society. That's the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.